You're listening to IRIS, the Iowa Radio Reading Information Service. Welcome to the reading of the Dubuque Telegraph Herald. Today is Monday, January 25th, but we are reading the paper for Sunday, January 24th. Support for this reading comes from the DePaco R. W. Hoffer Foundation. I'm Bernadette.
And I'm Nancy.
And here is our first story.
The wage gauge. Officials say rise in pay indicates the local economy is headed in the right direction. Over the course of the last decade, Mike Burgess has been in a prime position to observe the fluctuations in pay in the local manufacturing industry. Burgess worked as a manager at Collins Aerospace in Bellevue for multiple years. He now serves as the CEO at East Iowa Machine Company in Farley. At those two positions, he has watched what once was a slow uptick in wages suddenly gain considerable steam. "I think wages were fairly stable back 5 years ago," Burgess said. "In the last 3 to 5 years, we've seen manufacturing become way more competitive locally. On the entry-level side, companies are no longer paying $10, $11, or $12. Those jobs are paying more like $13, $14, or $15. Data maintained by Greater Dubuque Development Corporation shows that average wages for Dubuque County workers in the manufacturing industry rose to $63,915 in 2020, an increase of more than $5,000 or 9.3% compared to wages from 2015. And while this uptick seems significant to those in the manufacturing sector, the growth in that industry actually has lagged behind the acceleration of wages in other corners of the economy. Wages across the country grew by 12.4% in the past half decade, reaching $47,684 in 2020. Multiple signs suggest the acceleration of wages is poised to continue. As growing companies encounter a shallow labor pool, they have been forced to increase pay in order to recruit and retain workers. Local economic experts believe the COVID-19 pandemic and its further narrowing of the labor market will merely exacerbate that trend. Meanwhile, minimum wage increases in Illinois and the possibility of similar increases on a federal level add regulatory pressure to the pay hikes already fueled by free market forces. Rick Dickerson, president and CEO of Greater Dubuque Development Corporation, believes the figures are evidence that the local economy is headed in the right direction.
The city hopes for additional pandemic relief funding. With more than $1.3 million in COVID-related expenses and $4.8 million in projected revenue losses, City of Dubuque officials are looking for relief. Officials have made extra expenditures throughout the pandemic on personal protective equipment, building disinfectant, and remote work telecommunications. Meanwhile, revenue losses from parking fees, hotel and motel tax, and gaming taxes are expected to continue this year, according to the data provided to the Telegraph Herald. Jenny Lawson, the city's director of finance and budget, said the full cost of the pandemic to the city is still unknown, as revenue projections continue to shift and COVID-19 expenditures continue to rise. "We're unsure of how long these costs are going to continue," she said. "Certain costs will likely go up over time, but there are others that will go down." Since the beginning of the pandemic, city officials have spent $470,919 on transit operations and personal protective equipment related to COVID-19, over $350,000 on non-congregate sheltering, to isolate potential COVID-19 cases, and $75,305 for remote work telecommunications. Officials have also spent over $52,000 on building disinfectant. In fiscal year 2020, the city saw close to a $1.2 million in revenue losses due to COVID-19, including $675,982 in parking fees and fines, and $185,096 in hotel and motel tax. City officials project that those declines will be even steeper in fiscal year 2021, with the current projections estimating at about a $2.7 million loss. The city has received both state and federal relief to help offset the pandemic impacts, including $3.6 million in federal assistance as part of the Coronavirus Act Relief and Economic Security Act, $1.4 million from the state of Iowa, and $647,301 in federal community development block grants. However, officials still project overall losses as a result of the pandemic based on the current amount of relief allocated to the city. "I don't see relief covering everything," Lawson said. At this point, it would end up covering the continuing expenditure and revenue losses. City leaders already implemented various cost-saving practices, including a hiring freeze on vacant positions and frozen travel budgets. Larson said additional cost-saving measures still might be needed. "Each city department has been directed to develop budget reduction plans from 10% to 30%. None of those plans have been implemented, but Larson said they could be if needed. It's one of the options that the city manager could determine that needs to be used," she said. City officials have said they are prepared to take more action to offset the monetary losses inflicted by the pandemic, but they hope that instead they see additional relief from state or federal government. City Council member Danny Sprank said, "The city will need to figure out a way to make up for revenue losses," adding that the council has reached out to Governor Kim Reynolds. "We have reached out and contacted our governor requesting funds, but we haven't heard anything back," he said. "This is a big discussion that I've been thinking about for a while. We have to figure something out if there isn't relief." Mayor Royal Buell said he is confident financial relief will come from the federal government, adding that he feels more sure of that outcome now that President Joe Biden has taken office. "I think it will be a focus on how to help local governments and make them whole in the next stimulus," Buell said. "We are doing what we can to keep costs down and not doing certain projects, but we will need some help to make sure we come out of this in a positive way." Still, COVID-19-related expenditures and revenue losses will remain unknown until the end of fiscal year 2021. So the full impact of the pandemic remains to be seen. If there is stimulus relief from the state or federal government, Buell said he hopes it will be enough.
Person who makes a difference. Man helps improve Joe Davis County Fire Department. Bill Bingham's greatest calling is out of public service. In Galena, Bill Bingham moved back to his hometown in 2011 with the intention of retiring. Instead, he found himself volunteering for both the local fire department and emergency medical service team. It wasn't entirely surprising. Bingham's father was a longtime firefighter. Bingham himself was fire chief for a department when he lived in Florida. For him, joining the local fire department after moving back home seemed inevitable. "I can't get my dad's voice out of my head when he says your greatest calling is out of public service," Bingham said. "It's just something I feel I should do." Bingham's plans of being an occasional volunteer quickly were thwarted. Over the next 10 years, he helped develop new protocol for Galena Fire Department, took over leadership and restructuring of Galena Area EMS, and led efforts to address volunteer shortages in Joe Davis County. He also has made time to serve on the Joe Davis County Board. In many ways, retirement never came. I'm working 50 to 60 hours a week here and had to give up a lot of things that I didn't anticipate when I left Florida, Bingham said. It needs to be done, though. I care about it. When Bingham started volunteering with the fire department, Chief Randy Beadle initially asked him to help with administrative tasks, including developing an operational policy and assigning protocols for department matters. He was very instrumental in helping us progress with our fire department, Beadle said. He has spent a lot of time giving to the fire department to make it better. When Bingham joined the Galena EMS, he took over similar duties in helping to organize and structure the department. He initially avoided taking any leadership roles, but in 2018, he became EMS coordinator for the city. I wanted to just keep driving the ambulance every now and then. But Galena EMS had some things I thought needed to be addressed, Bingham said. In 2019, he led a countywide project to address local fire departments and EMS agencies' struggle to find volunteers. Bingham and his team released a report in early 2020, detailing strategies the county could pursue to bolster volunteer numbers. Bingham was recently recognized as the 2020 Volunteer of the Year by Galena Area Chamber of Commerce for his many efforts. Bingham said plenty of work remains, however. Fire department and EMS service membership remains low, while calls continue to rise. While he would like to spend more time as a retiree on the golf course, Bingham said he remains committed to helping improve local fire and EMS service. If somebody needs help, that is when somebody needs to step up, Bingham said. I'm just trying to do my part.
Man and boy die from injuries in a Grant County house fire. Blue River, Wisconsin. A man and a boy died from injuries sustained in the house fire in Grant County on Saturday, while two more children were airlifted for medical treatment. The names of those involved have not been released, though authorities said the man was 33 years old and the boy 12. The Grant County Sheriff's Department said that the fire at 105 J Street in Blue River, in the northern part of the county, was reported about 3:40 a.m. when there was smoke coming from the residence. Authorities were advised that multiple people were trapped inside. Three adults and three children were taken to area hospitals. The 33-year-old man and 12-year-old boy died. The release states that one child was airlifted to the UW Hospital and clinics in Madison in critical condition, while another child was airlifted to a hospital in Milwaukee. Two other adults were treated and released. The fire remains under investigation, and the staff from the State Fire Marshal's Office responded to the scene to assist, the release states. Red Cross officials are assisting the family, and no additional information is being released at this time. Bellevue Community Schools seek approval to continue their sales tax spending method. The Bellevue, Iowa Community School District leaders in March will ask voters for permission to continue spending revenue from the state's 1 cent sales tax for infrastructure projects. Officials are planning a special election for March 2nd to reauthorize their current revenue purpose statement for sales tax funds. Officials seek to continue spending those dollars on projects allowed by the Iowa Code, such as building, remodeling, and expanding school buildings, purchasing equipment and technology, and providing funds for property tax relief. Iowa lawmakers in 2019 extended the sales tax from a sunset date at the end of 2029 to January 1, 2051. However, districts' current revenue purpose statements will expire on January 1, 2031, and voters must authorize the district plans for how they will spend their funds for the tax beyond that. And the council approves a rezoning for a health clinic. The Dubuque City Council members last week agreed to rezone a lot on the west end for the potential construction of an occupational health clinic. Council members voted 7-0 to rezone the 5.6-acre property at the intersection of the Northwest Arterial and Chavanel Road from a planned industrial to a general commercial district. Officials from Medical Associates Clinic have said they plan to open a clinic to serve Dubuque's industrial center and surrounding communities, though no firm timetable for the project has been established. Members of the Dubuque Zoning Advisory Commission voted 7-0 earlier this month in favor of the rezoning.
Walk for Life marks 36 years in Dubuque. Dubuque County Right to Life plans effort to repair a memorial to the unborn. After getting involved with an anti-abortion group at Loras College, freshman Kaylee Scumo decided to march for a cause she believed in. She was among about 75 people who participated in Dubuque County Right to Life 36th Annual Walk for Life on Saturday morning. The annual event protests the U.S. Supreme Court's Roe v. Wade decision, which protects a woman's right to have an abortion. Participants walked from Washington Square to the Dubuque County Courthouse and back. Many held cups of hot chocolate provided by organizers to combat the cold. Scumo said her family has opposed abortion ever since her mother was advised to abort her older brother because he was likely to die from a medical condition. Her brother passed away soon after his birth, but Scumo said she and her family have always been happy he was able to live for even a short while. We think that his life has value. He is loved and he is worth it, she said. I believe all people are worth it. Right to Life organization officials shared their goal to revitalize the memorial to the unborn at Mount Olivet Cemetery. The memorial, completed in 2002, features a small pond and stream and serves as a place for people to grieve aborted children and other loved ones. When this memorial began, it was considered state of the art, but weather and time have taken their toll, Ashley Stackus, the group's executive director, told the crowd. She said officials aim to raise $22,000 to replace dead plants and fix the stream system. Dubuque County Right to Life members Teresa Shepherd and Kathy Slinger told the crowd that visiting the memorial helped them grieve children they aborted years ago. Going there helps me feel close to my daughter, Rachel, Shepherd said. It brings me comfort to have a place where I can feel peace and think about just her. Organizers didn't have to make many COVID-19 related changes to the event because Walk for Life is held outdoors, though organizers canceled the chilly luncheon typically held after the walk, Stackus said. Participants wore masks and were able to spread out in the park. Dubuque County Right to Life leaders also canceled their annual trip to Washington, D.C. for the National March for Life on January 20. Organizers of that event ended up opting to hold it virtually.
Delaware County supervisors approve a permit for a wind farm. Delaware County supervisors recently approved a permit for a wind farm after the action was tabled in previous meetings. The application for CED Manchester Wind, LLC, was approved after project officials with Con Edison agreed to drop their request for variances on the project that would not have complied with the county code. The plan calls for 3 turbines to be built along driveways from 230th Street All turbines are on land secured with long-term lease agreements. The turbines will be connected with an underground connection line that follows east along 230th Street to 167th Avenue. The supervisors had told Con Edison officials in previous meetings they were reluctant to grant variances for the project to move forward. At previous meetings, Con Edison had requested a variance on the county's blade height clearance requirement when the blade is positioned at 6 o'clock. The county ordinance specifies a clearance of 75 feet. Con Edison officials had asked to be able to use a blade with a 72.2 feet clearance, since they had already purchased a turbine with that length of blade. In addition, officials with the company were reluctant to agree to a performance bond requirement of 130% of the project costs. But the county supervisors held firm on both counts. At a recent meeting, Con Edison officials dropped the request for the variances. After the last board meeting, we thought we heard pretty loud and clear about the minimum ground clearance and that it would be held firm at 75 feet, Con Edison representative Sean Waslow told the supervisors. We were able to go back to our engineers and ask what we could do. Turns out we could increase the height of the pedestal for the wind turbine by 3 feet to bring it into compliance with the ordinance. According to Waslow, Con Edison will also meet the performance bond requirements and sent a letter to the county officials to say so. After hearing the discussion at the last meeting again, we heard pretty clearly that there will be some sort of performance bond required. We will comply and won't ask for a variance anymore, he told the supervisors.
Election preview. Newcomer aims to bring transparency to council. The owner of a business consulting company says she seeks to provide residents with better representation by winning a seat on the Dubuque City Council. Nicole Weber, 41, faces Susan Farber and John Pregler in the February 2nd primary election for the council's Ward 1 seat. The top two vote-getters advance to the March 2nd special election. The ward covers much of the southern and western half of Dubuque. A native of Dubuque, Weber spent 5 years as a mental health therapist prior to her work as a business consultant. In an interview, the Telegraph Herald asked Weber about four of the issues facing the city and council: the Five Flag Center, spending and debt, taxes, and city management. Weber says she opposes a proposal to borrow about $74 million to demolish the current Five Flag Center and construct a new one that stretches across West 5th Street, increasing its capacity from 4,000 seats to more than 6,400. In regard to spending and debt, Weber said she believes the city's spending is allocated incorrectly. While she approves of the city's current investment in public safety, she added that an equal amount of investment should be given to health and social services. Weber said she does not support raising taxes on residents with the current state of the economy. She instead proposed that action should be taken to reduce city spending. In city management, in the summer of 2019, four council members pushed to fire city manager Mike Van Milligan for 16 alleged failings and concerns. All four, including Shaw, are no longer on the council. Weber said she would push for more transparency in city government.
Another candidate. This candidate pushes for fiscal responsibility. A Dubuque man running for a seat on the city council vows to carefully scrutinize expenditures, keeping in mind the financial burden of residents. John Pregler, 52, faces Susan Farber and Nicole Weber in the February 2nd primary election for the council's Ward 1 seat. The top two vote-getters will advance to the March 2nd special election. The ward covers much of the southern and western half of Dubuque. Kevin Lynch was appointed in the summer to fill the seat after Brett Shaw resigned when he moved from Dubuque. But in August, a citizen's petition calling for a special election was filled. Pregler narrowly lost the race for the seat to Shaw in 2017. A native of Dubuque, Pregler currently is vice president of the Asset Management Solution for Dated Transfer Solutions, LLC. He has more than 20 years of experience working as a consultant with local, state, and federal government. In the interview, Telegraph Herald asked Pregler about four of the issues facing the city council. The Five Flag Center. Pregler expressed his opposition to a proposal to borrow about $74 million to demolish the current Five Flag Center and construct a new one that stretches across West Fifth Street, increasing the capacity from 4,000 seats to more than 6,400. We do not need to stick a magnificent investment into Five Flags. We do need to stick a significant investment into Five Flags, but I do not think the city or the city taxpayer or our retirees can afford the $80 to $100 million additional in debt. City spending and debt. Pregler stressed he will advocate for fiscal responsibility on behalf of the city's low-income, retired, and disabled residents. It's a mentality that he feels is largely missing among current council members. Most projects that come before the council are good projects, and if we had an unlimited treasury, I would fund them all. Unfortunately, we have to get our money and pay for these bills from our tax base, and we don't have an unlimited treasury. Taxes. Pregler opposes the city's support for a legislature passing a bill allowing municipalities to raise their local option sales tax by 0.5 percentage points, a move he said would hurt all Dubuque residents. And city management. In the summer of 2019, four council members pushed to fire city manager Mike Van Milligan for 16 alleged failings and concerns. All four, including Sean, are no longer on the council. Pregler said he believes the issue with the city manager and this council's handling of it should be addressed, but he does not believe Van Milligan should be fired.
The third candidate is a businesswoman running for the Dubuque City Council who hopes to use her expertise to help residents. Susan Barber, 69, faces John Pregler and Nicole Weber in the February 2nd primary. A native of Dubuque, Barber is the co-owner of Magoo's Pizza on University. Prior to returning to Dubuque in 2003, she spent a career working as an executive for Global Telecommunications Corporation. In an interview, the Telegraph Herald asked her about the same issues. The Five Flags Center. Given the impact of the COVID-19 pandemic, Barber said she believes it is important for the city to reassess its proposed investment in the city-owned Five Flags Center. Prior to the pandemic, officials had planned to ask voters in 2020 to approve the borrowing of the money to demolish the current aging facility and construct a new one. Last July, however, council members voted to table discussion until 2022. Barber said she still believes an investment needs to be made, but she also proposes city officials explore a combination of public and private funding.
You are listening to the Dubuque Telegraph Herald on IRIS, the Iowa Radio Reading Information Service for the Blind and Print Handicapped. Your reader is Bernadette
and Nancy.
If you have any comments on this or on any IRIS program, please call 243-6833 or toll-free at 877-404-4747. And don't forget, this and many other IRIS programs are available from our website at iowaradioreading.org. Now we return to the Telegraph Herald. For obituaries, we have the funeral of Michael Ahern. Mike Ahern, age 56, of Dubuque, passed away unexpectedly on Thursday, January 21st, 2021, at his home. To celebrate Mike's life, family and friends may visit from 4 p.m. to 6 p.m. on Monday, January 25th, at the Bear Funeral Home at 1491 Main Street. Due to COVID-19 concerns, the number of people inside the building will be limited, and all who attend will be required to wear a face covering and are asked to please maintain social distancing practices. To honor Mike's life, funeral services will be held immediately following the visitation at 6 p.m. on Monday at the Bear Funeral Home, with Deacon John Stearman officiating. Mike was born on October 9, 1964, in Dubuque, the son of Lawrence and Patricia Williams Ahern. Mike married the love of his life, Jennifer Hochberger, on September 6, 2003. He had a zest for life and always needed to stay busy. Mike loved to work and developed that strong work ethic on his aunt and uncle's farm as a young boy. He has worked as a floor installer for the past 19 years and was a perfectionist down to the most minor detail. Mike was also handy in all areas of construction, and when he wasn't working, he was helping his family and friends with home improvement projects. He loved spending time with his family, especially when it involved spoiling the kids and pets. Mike was deeply loved and will be missed by his family and friends. Those left to cherish Mike's memory include his wife, Jenny Ahern of Dubuque, his children, Thomas Ahern, Matthew Ahern, and Lissy Ahern, all of Dubuque, and his grandchildren and siblings. Mike was preceded in death by his parents and grandparents. The family will thankfully receive your support through phone calls, greeting cards, and memorials in Mike's memory, which may be mailed to the Bear Funeral Home.
Michael Wiegand. Mike Wiegand, 77, of Dubuque, of Marion, sorry, formerly of Dubuque, passed away on January 18th at Living Center West in Cedar Rapids. Due to the COVID-19 pandemic, private family services are being provided by Stuart Baxter Funeral and Memorial Service. Cards and condolences may be mailed to the Wiegand family in care of Stuart Baxter, 1844 First Avenue, Northeast, Cedar Rapids, 52402. Mike Wiegand was born December 13, 1943, in Dubuque, son of Harlan and Darlene Christ Wiegand, who preceded him in death. Mike graduated from Dubuque Senior. He married the former Carol Holzhammer Lehman on August 27, 1976. Soon after graduation, Mike began his lifelong career as a very respected businessman in automotive sales and management. He was general manager at the former Dan Cruz Pontiac in Dubuque. Upon the move to Cedar Rapids, he was the used car manager at the former Bob Zimmerman Ford and general manager at Plaza Auto Auction in Mount Vernon. On August 1, 1987, Mike and Carol opened and were the proud owners of Mike Wiegand Motors on Mount Vernon Road in Cedar Rapids, where they worked together for 29 years until they retired on November 1st, 2016, due to Mike's declining health. While at home but missing the car business, Mike went back to work for Lexington Motors in Marion for a short time. Mike is survived by Carol, his wife of 44 years, his daughter Nicole, granddaughter Alyssa, and great-grandchildren Richard Bailey and Desmond Bailey. He is also survived by his sister, Carol Cohen,
of Dubuque, and many other loving family members. Carol and family extend their appreciation to the longtime customers of Mike Wigan Motors for their support and friendship throughout the years. We couldn't have done it without you. A special thank you to his favorite caretakers at Living Center West, his hospice care nurse Hannah, and his dear friends Robert Walton, Jack Lindstrom, and Cora and Bob Collins. Please share your support and memories with Mike's family on his tribute wall at www.stuartbaxter.com under obituaries. Catherine Ferry, Lancaster, Wisconsin. Catherine Ferry, 88, of Lancaster, died on Wednesday, January 20th. There will be no visitation. Private family funeral service will be held on Monday, January 25th at Martin Schwartz Funeral Home and Crematory in Lancaster. Private family burial will be in Hillside Cemetery, Lancaster.
Frank Surcue. Frank Surcue, 83, of Dubuque, died on Friday, January 1st, 2021. No services were held. Engelhart, Sinkert, and Casper Funeral Home and Crematory were in charge of the cremation. Robert L. Schreiber. Robert L. Schreiber, age 94, of Dubuque, passed away on Friday, January 22nd, 2021. A mass of Christian burial will be held on Tuesday, January 26th at 10 a.m. at St. Joseph the Worker Catholic Church in Dubuque, and will be live streamed on the Engelhart, Siegert, and Casper Funeral Facebook homepage. Reverend Jim Gerund will officiate. Condolences and memories may be shared at www.engelhoffsiegertcasper.com, where a link to the live stream is available. Because our dad was adamant that the celebration of his life in the midst of a pandemic not risk the safety of his family, friends, and colleagues, there will be no wake. He was preceded in death by the love of his life, his wife Jeanette, to whom he was married 64 years. He missed her every day following her death in 2014. He is survived by three children, Mary Ellen Thompson of Williamsburg, Jim Renee Schreiber of Dubuque, and Dr. Ann Schreiber, also of Dubuque. Four grandchildren, Zachary of Orlando, Florida, Andrea Kwan of Des Moines, Lieutenant Andrew Faring of Norfolk, Virginia, and Martha Levy of Dubuque, who have among them six great-grandchildren. He is also survived by his brother, John Schreiber. He was preceded in death by his parents, Carl and Emily, sisters, Mary and Marita, brothers, Fred and Charlie, and all their spouses. Robert was a veteran of World War II. After the war, he graduated from Morris College and enjoyed a long career of Interstate Power Company, now Alliant Energy. He retired at 62 and spent years exploring the country. His children thank him for trying to instill common sense and real-life practical skills. He will be remembered for his endless story, his constant supply of jokes, and dry sense of humor. He was a kind man and a kind gentleman who will live on in the hearts of many who knew him. A very special thanks to the staff of the Grand Meadows facility.
Francisca Collar, OP. Hazel Green, Wisconsin. Sister Francisca Fran Collar died January 19th at St. Dominic Villa in Hazel Green. She was born as Marie Agnes on August 10th, 1931. To Joseph and Mary Pimishern Collar in Appleton, Wisconsin. She was the 10th of 11 children. She is survived by one brother and one sister and her beloved Dominican sisters. Sister Fran was a welcome presence in the classrooms and communities where she lived. She taught with energy and zest in Illinois, Minnesota, South Carolina, Indiana, and Wisconsin. She loved adventure and brought her spiritual talents as pastoral minister, liturgist, administrator, and chaplain to Iowa, Tennessee, Alaska, Trinidad, and again to Wisconsin. Services will be held January 27th and 28th at Cincinnati. Miller Funeral Home is handling arrangements. Brittany L. Dushner Hefferman of Farley, 30 years old, died on Friday, January 22nd. Arrangements are pending at Rife Funeral Home in Farley.
Ralph V. Teeks, age 98 of Dubuque, and formerly of East Dubuque, was called home peacefully at 4:45 p.m. on Tuesday, January 19th, 2021, at Mercy One in Dubuque. To celebrate Ralph's life, family and friends may visit from 10 a.m. until 11 a.m. on Monday, January 25th, at the Bear Funeral Home, 1491 Main Street. Due to COVID-19 concerns, the number of people inside the building will be limited, and all who attend will be required to wear a face covering and are asked to maintain social distancing practices. To honor Ralph's life, funeral services will be held immediately following the visitation at 11 a.m. on Monday at the Bear Funeral Home, with Deacon John Stiermeyer officiating. The service will be available for viewing at the Bear Funeral Home Facebook page. Burial will be at Mount Carmel Cemetery, where full military honors will be accorded by the Dubuque Marine Corps League. Ralph was born on March 29, 1932, in Dubuque, Iowa, the son of Edmund and Ella Linden Tanks. He honorably served his country as a U.S. Army corporal from 1950 to 1952 during the Korean War. Upon his return, Ralph began his career with Dubuque Stamping and Manufacturing before going to Flexsteel Industry, where he was a machine operator. He devoted 42 years to Flexsteel until his well-earned retirement in 1997. Ralph was united in marriage to Carol Schmidt on May 16, 1953, at St. Patrick's Church in Dubuque. They raised their family together and were blessed with 49 years of marriage before Carol passed away on August 26, 2002. Ralph was a loving husband, father, and grandpa who worked hard, but also enjoyed spending quality time with his children, grandchildren, great-grandchildren, siblings, neighbor, and friends. When he had a little downtime, Ralph loved spending it in the great outdoors, hunting and fishing. He looked forward to hosting the annual fish fry at his house every Labor Day weekend. Those left to cherish Ralph's memory include his children, Terrence from Eagle River, Minnesota, Jeffrey from Middleton, Iowa, Jeff, Kathy Teeks of Dubuque, Jacqueline Jackie Cruiser of Cedar Rapids, and a special granddaughter, Ashley. Ralph was preceded in death by his loving parents, his wife, Carol, a son, Craig, a daughter, Becky Jo, and four sisters, Anelda Dress, Mildred Dugan, Marge Keehan, and Eileen Pierce. The family will thankfully receive your support through phone calls, greeting cards, and memorials in Ralph's memory, which may be mailed to the Bear Funeral Home at 1491 Main Street in Dubuque.
Shirley Winter, Galena. Shirley Winter, 88, passed away on Wednesday, January 20th at Galena Stahl's Senior Care Community. Funeral services will be at 10 a.m. Monday, January 25th, at Miller Funeral Home in East Dubuque. Burial will be in Greenwood Cemetery in Galena. Visitation will be from 1 to 5 on Sunday at the funeral home. Due to the COVID pandemic, face masks and social distancing are required, and occupancy regulations will be enforced. Mildred Shirley was born November 7, 1932, in Dubuque,
the daughter of Clarence and Alberta Dolly Miller White. She graduated from Galena High School. She was united in marriage to Verl Winter on February 19, 1955, in Galena. He passed away on September 2, 2005. Shirley worked many jobs throughout her life at Burgess Battery Factory, ran the county poor farm, worked at Eastside Grocery, and in 1969, she started at Grant's Home Historical Sites as Assistant Site Superintendent, retiring in 1997. After retiring, she worked at Happy Joe's for several years. Shirley made beautiful cross-stitch quilts for each child, grandchild, and great-grandchild. There were many trips taken, including the yearly shopping trip to Clinton with the girls, stopping in Thompson for melons on the way home. She also enjoyed bus trips with Lamont from the bank. There are many memories, special times spent with the extended family of the 630th Engineers, the trips to Branson, and many reunions across the country, the favorite being when Shirley would host it at her house. Shirley is survived by two sons, Terry, Jake, and Ron, both of Galena, 5 grandchildren, 10 great-grandchildren. She was preceded in death by her parents, husband Verl, brothers Don Jr., Billy, sister Nancy, and great-grandson Owen Sharp. Online condolences may be left for the family at www.millerhead.com.
Michael J. Mockler, 30, of Dubuque, entered peacefully into eternal life on January 21, 2021, after a courageous journey with brain cancer. A visitation will be held on Tuesday, January 26, from 3 to 7 p.m., in the Resurrection Church social space in Dubuque, with the Divine Mercy Chaplet at 2 p.m. The Mass of Christian Burial will take place on Wednesday, January 27th at 10:30 a.m. at Resurrection Church, with Father Ken Frisch presiding. A funeral Mass will be live streamed on the Miller Funeral Home Group Facebook page. Burial will follow at St. Joseph's Cemetery in Cincinnati, Wisconsin. Masks and social distancing are encouraged. Occupancy guidelines will be followed. Michael was born on February 8, 1990, to John and Carolyn Hartman Mockler in Worcester, Massachusetts, which gave him his passion for the Patriots, Red Sox, and all seafood. He was a dedicated Hawkeye fan who enjoyed nature. Humble and kind, Michael embraced life each day with a positive attitude and made an impact on all those around him. Michael was a proud member of the Wallard Catholic High School class of 2008 and named outstanding senior of the St. Mary's University of Minnesota class of 2012. He enjoyed his time rehabilitating birds, especially bald eagles, at the Raptor Educational Group. Above all else, Michael loved his bride, Cassie, and they were married on March 1, 2014, at St. Joseph's Church in Cincinnati. They enjoyed going on adventures, running together, and spending time with family and friends. Michael was a proud member of the Knights of Columbus and the St. Joseph Holy Name Society. He put his faith among all things and inspired everyone with the way he lived. Michael is survived by his wife, Cassandra, parents, John and Carolyn Mockler, siblings, Catherine, Andy, Meyer, Brian, Emma, and Sarah Mockler, and his parents-in-law, Roger and Mary Ellen Burney, and plus many godchildren, nieces, nephews, aunts, uncles, cousins, and friends. He is preceded in death by his baby, Aurora, in 2019, paternal grandparents, John P. and Mary Lee Mockler, and maternal grandparents, Frank and Agnes Hartman, and an uncle, Mark Friedman. In lieu of flowers, a Michael Mockler Memorial Fund will be established. Miller Funeral Home of East Dubuque is serving the family, and online condolences will be left for the family at www.miller.org. Fred.com.
Elizabeth Ann Smith. Elizabeth Ann Smith, 80, of Dubuque, formerly of Glidden, Iowa, died on Wednesday, January 6th, at University Hospital in Madison. Ann was born on September 11, 1940, in Coon Rapids, Iowa, daughter of Rollo and Virginia Moore Smith. Ann accepted Christ as her Savior at an early age and was baptized at Raccoon River Bible Camp, of which she had many childhood and adult memories. She was valedictorian of her senior high school graduating class and furthered her education at UNI, which was known at the time as Iowa State Teachers College in Cedar Falls, where she obtained her teaching certificate. She continued her education through classes at the University of Minnesota and many years of summer school to be able to finally obtain her master's degree in elementary education. During her career, she taught in several locations in Iowa and Minnesota, and one year in Guatemala for a missionary that came home from furlough, ultimately ending up in Dubuque, where she finished her teaching career and retired to live out her life in Dubuque. Ann was a member of Hope Evangelical Free Church. She loved her church and her church family, enjoyed working with the Ladies Missionary Society. She was also an accomplished pianist and started playing for church services when she was 12 years old and played for several years at Hope Church. Those left to cherish Ann's memory include her brother, Vernon Smith, from Marion, her brother Donald Smith from Maple Valley, Washington, her brother Robert Smith from Knoxville, Iowa, along with many nieces and nephews. Ann was preceded in death by her parents, as well as a brother, Keith Smith from Omaha, and sister Margaret from Glidden, Iowa.
Thelma Martins, 93, of Oak Park Place, passed away on Friday, January 22nd, 2021, at the Stonehill Care Center. Visitation will be from 10 a.m. to 11 a.m. Tuesday, January 26th, at the Egglehorf, Siebert, and Casper Funeral Home and Crematorium at 2659 John F. Kennedy Road in Dubuque, where a service will be held at 11 a.m. and will be live-streamed on the Funeral Home Facebook page. Margaret Ann Casper will officiate. Masks and social distancing are required, and burial will be at the Mount Olivet Cemetery. Condolences and memories may be shared at the www.egglehoffsiegertcasper.com website. Thelma was born February 10, 1927, in Epworth, Iowa, the daughter of Fred and Lucy Osterhaus. She graduated from St. Joseph's Academy. Thelma married William Red Martins on May 30, 1949, at the Church of the Nativity in Dubuque. He preceded her in death on July 2, 1997. Prior to her marriage, Thelma worked in the office at Sears. She was a longtime member of St. Anthony Catholic Church, where she volunteered in the rectory. Thelma always made sure to keep busy. While her children were young, she served as a Girl Scout leader and a den mother for the Cub Scouts. She was a member of the Lacoma Ladies Golf League. In her later years, she volunteered at the Red Cross Blood Center and Finley Hospital Sunshine Circle. Thelma and Red enjoyed socializing at the North End Gun Club, and after the death of her husband, she continued to go out with the North End Gun Club widows. She was also a member of the Red Hat Society. She loved to play board games and travel. Thelma is survived by her son, Bob Martins of Dubuque, her daughter, Sue Jo Mateel of Dubuque, and triplet grandsons, Jeffrey of Washington, D.C., Matthew of San Francisco, and Nathan of Fagan, Minnesota. Three great-grandchildren, Lucy, Emma, and Max, her sister-in-law, Nancy Osterhaus of Davenport, Iowa, and nieces and nephews. She was preceded in death by her parents, her husband, her son, William J. Martins, and her brothers, Merlin, John, and Donald. Velma's family would like to send a special thank you to the family of Don and Margaret Mateel for their years of friendship, and to Hospice of Dubuque, Stonehill Care Center, and Oak Park Place for their care of Velma.
Mark J. Cook, 73, of East Dubuque, passed away Thursday, January 21st at Mercy One in Dubuque. Funeral services will be at 2 p.m. on Tuesday, January 26th at Miller Funeral Home in East Dubuque, with Deacon Jamie Schilling officiating. Burial will be in East Dubuque Cemetery with military honors accorded by members of the Dubuque Marine Corps League. Visitation will be from 10:30 a.m. to 1:45 p.m. on Tuesday at the funeral. Mark was born April 30th, 1947, in Dubuque, the son of James and Lucille Lang Cook. He was a graduate of Dubuque Senior High School, class of 1965. On May 29th, 1971, he was united in marriage to Debbie Arthur at St. Mary's Church in East Dubuque. Mark was formerly employed at International Harvester in Dubuque. He was a member of Teamsters Local Number 120 and a veteran of the U.S. Army, serving during the Vietnam War. He enjoyed metal detecting, fishing, coin collecting, NASCAR racing, and spoiling grandchildren. Surviving are his wife, Debbie, two children, Rob of Dubuque, and Lisa Brace of Mokena, Illinois, 11 grandchildren, two siblings, his in-laws, and numerous nieces and nephews. He was preceded in death by his parents, James and Lucille. Siblings, Kathleen, Riley, Margaret Wood, and Robert and Gerald Cook.
This brings us to the end of today's reading of the Dubuque Telegraph Herald for January 25th. I'm your reader, Bernadette.
And Nancy.
Support for this reading comes from the DePaco R.W. Hoffer Foundation. The Telegraph Herald can be heard each weekday at 2 p.m. All programs heard on IRIS are intended solely for the blind and print handicapped. If you have any questions or comments on this or on any IRIS program, please call our office toll-free at 877-404-4747. And thank you for listening.